miss tomorrow and then take it on Monday and take a lower grade or something.
Well, if you did that, yeah, under those circumstances, you'd have to get a grade drop.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, you could do it that way, I suppose. If you wanted to, I don't know how long, the quiz is probably going to take the first half hour or so, so you may want to come in for the second half. But, yeah, I'll just actually give it. It might be, it might be better than just to take it cold turkey, you know.
Yeah.
So, remind me when you turn in the test.
Okay.
Circumstances were.
Sure. So.
Come up with some fare.
So I should skip next tomorrow morning.
Yeah. So. Right. First half hour.
Okay.
So. Okay, again, a reminder of that vocab quiz tomorrow. Do that first part of the hour. And we have a quiz on the chapter 12 and 13 verb forms next Wednesday, the 15th. And that's what I'm doing a little bit of review right now about. And then we'll do a little bit of translation of sentences and some exercises working with these things if we have some more time today to do that. We're talking about the present, future, and past tense forms and summarizing the information in the textbook in more of an outline type form. We left off yesterday talking about the future forms and put the paradigm on the board and then discussed the complications. The stem ends in a vowel. You just add a segment of the base of the present base and add the same present endings. But if the base ends in a certain series of consonants, there are certain phonological changes that we put on the board. And then the final complication is that many of these are irregular, and so the only way to know what happens is to memorize the second principal part, which is the future form. And for as far as our test is concerned, I told you on page 78 there was the only irregular futures you'll be responsible for are the ones that are on that page and also have second aorists. Okay, let's look at the past tenses then. And we'll call that Roman numeral 3 according to the outline we had on the board yesterday. We'll call that past tenses. And that breaks down into two past tenses that we're concerned about right now. First of all, A, the imperfect. And then, of course, B will be the aorist when we get to it. Now, the imperfect is formed in Greek by putting what's called the augment in the front, augment plus present base, plus imperfect ending. Now this turns out to be one of the most regularly formed sets of verb forms there are in the whole language. And there are very few exceptions to this. We saw one with echo being acon. But other than that, that's probably the most common exception we'll have because that's a rather common verb. But by and large, these are so regular that there's no separate principal part for the imperfect. The imperfect is just formed on the present base, the first principal part. So let's put our paradigm down. For the imperfect, we have the augment, which is an epsilon normally. We'll see what complications occur with that over a moment. And then our present base, lu, and then a set of endings. The first form is luon, lus, for the second person singular, lua or lun, for the second person plural, third person singular, excuse me, and that's an optional note. Lumen, and Lueta,
And Eluon.
Yes.
Okay, so again, doing what we've done before here, we have an augment plus the present base plus a set of endings. And these are called the imperfect endings. Now, to compare the perfect endings with the present endings that we had before, first person singular is quite different. The other one was omega, this one's almost nu. The second person singular isn't too far off. This is epsilon sigma, whereas the other one was epsilon iota sigma. So you can, this sigma idea, I think you can carry across. The third person singular, not too far off, an epsilon as opposed to epsilon iota, but this one does have the optional nu. The third person, the first person plural is the same ending, omen, and the second person plural is the same ending, etet. Third person plural is quite a bit different. This is omicron nu again, and this is the same ending as we see in the first person singular. In fact, the form is identical, first person singular and third person plural for the imperfect, which necessitates then a determination of which is which on the basis of context. It's the only way you can tell. Of course, usually it won't be that difficult if it's a, since they're third person forms, there will either be a subject stated, in which case if the subject is stated, then there's no question about which is which. Or usually in a context of, you know, if you're not stating the subject and using just the verb form, then the pronominal idea is so clear that, you know, you have an antecedent, you know what it is. So it's rarely going to cause you any real difficulty. Okay, complications. Concerning the forms here. The first complication has to do with the augment. The augment is usually just an epsilon, but if the stem begins, if the stem begins with a consonant, then your augment is an epsilon. There's no problem there. So as long as the stem begins with a consonant, augment is epsilon. So if you say augment epsilon if stem begins consonant. But if the stem begins with a vowel, we have problems. So if stem begins with a vowel, then we have another little chart to learn. And adding an augment onto something that's already a vowel results in certain phonological changes again. And so we'll just summarize those, and these are found in one of the pages of the textbook there, so you can just take them down from there if you want. But alpha plus the augment, and actually order-wise it would be better to probably say augment plus alpha, maybe I'll do it that way. In other words, alpha being the first letter of the stem, and you try to add an augment to that, it's going to result in eta. So it just lengthens that thing out to an eta. The augment plus epsilon does the same thing, becomes eta. The augment plus omicron becomes omega. The augment plus iota becomes iota, and they put a bar over it here because some transliterations and so forth do that. I guess, I haven't seen it to my knowledge in any text that I've looked at, but. Let's put it this way. Just put a iota and then put this in parentheses to indicate that it's a long iota. You pronounce it E instead of I. If you ever saw it. It's not very real common. So it's not going to look any different, and probably the pronunciation isn't going to be too much different because you're more than likely, at a first syllable like that, going to pronounce it E anyway. And then augment plus epsilon, again, it results in just an epsilon. No real change. They indicate, again, in the book, a bar over it, indicating a long one. Alpha iota, augment plus alpha iota, number of words begin with an alpha iota, that's going to result in eta with the iota subscript. So you can kind of think of that as a special case of this up here. If you think of this, you just add an iota onto the thing, you got an eta when you put the augment on this, now you get an eta with the iota subscript down here. And then augment plus, I am here, alpha epsilon is just going to be eta epsilon. So again, consider that a special case. Consider just the alpha has changed to aid him, you got it there. Omicron iota, augment plus omicron iota, we're beginning with omicron iota, it's going to become omega with the iota subscript. And then the augment plus epsilon upsilon is going to become eta upsilon. And sometimes no change, just eta epsilon upsilon again. So you'll see that both ways. And then augment plus epsilon iota is going to be simply epsilon iota, no real change. Okay, so that chart will take care of those augment changes. Now this chart gives you more than just the imperfect. The aorist also will have this augment problem, and it'll follow the same rules there as the aorist ones are concerned. So that's your primary complication for the imperfect, is the fact that the augment added to a vowel is going to result in some of these changes here. So you really need to know that chart and know that other chart with the sigma adding to really be able to form the forms. And so if you expect to get a perfect score on the test on Wednesday, you really need to know that. You got to learn it sooner or later. Might as well be now. Okay?
And it's not that difficult if you just think of the philosophy of the thing. Perhaps the most difficult ones are these last couple.
Okay, then. One other complication is that the imperfect is sometimes irregular, but relatively rarely. And what will happen there is the base will change. When they're irregular, the base will change. The ending systems will still be the same. But it is rather rare as far as the imperfect is concerned. So maybe a complication just add to this. Sometimes irregular. And your most common irregular one is the verb echo. And the imperfect is acon. Okay. Let's get a circumflex on this.
Okay. As far as that, one more thing, the aspect.
The important thing about the imperfect is that the aspect is definitely let's call it progressive aspect. Or always progressive aspect. Okay, and that's to be distinguished from the aorist, which is your indefinite aspect. So our futures, our present forms could be either progressive or indefinite, but the imperfect form is definitely progressive. The progressive aspect, meaning continuous action, progressive action. So the translations will be something like, depending on the context, I used to loose, I was loosing. It could be translated, I loosed, but if the context is indicating, the rest of the context is indicating that you loosed periodically over a period of time, you can still translate it, you know, the word itself in a kind of an indefinite way, but the context will have to dictate that it's a progressive action if you do that. If your context is not indicating that, then be sure and translate the verb in such a way to connote that. And that's usually the safest way to go, I think, anyway. Once you start playing around with these other translations, you can sometimes generate confusion that's not worth it. Okay. Any questions on the imperfect? All right. Then part B under the past tenses is the aorist. The word aorist comes from the Greek word meaning indefinite. And under this category, we have two subcategories. Number one will be the first aorist. And then, of course, you can guess that number two will be the second aorist. Fortunately, there aren't any third aorists or fourth. Okay, just first and second. All right, the basic first aorist form is built this way. Augment plus present base plus sigma plus first aorist in. Or one could also think of it as saying augment plus future base Because the future base is the present base plus sigma, plus you get your regular verb, plus first aorist endings. And we're talking only about first aorist now, of course. And even there, there's some complications. Okay, let's look at the paradigm. First person singular, second singular, third singular, first plural, second plural, third plural. Okay, we add our augment. We have our present base, lu, plus the sigma, plus a set of endings. And eldusa is the first person singular form. Eldusas, eldusen, optional lu again. Eldusamen. Now notice our accent shifting too. The rule for verb forms is the accent tries to get as far forward as it can according to the rules. So that's generally going to mean the accent will either be on the penult or antepenult, depending on whether the suffix, the last syllable of the suffix is long or short. And in this case, they're all short suffixes, so they're always going to be in the antepenult. Okay, we have then eleusatet. We will run into other endings later on that are long. Of course, we already have in the present. And eleuson. Eleuson. Okay, draw our little dotted lines here again to see what morphemes we're looking at. We've got four morphemes now. We've got the augment. We've got the present base. We've got a tense form, that you might call it, the sigma. And then we've got our ending, person number suffix. So putting all those together in the right way, we end up with an aorist, first aorist form. Ending-wise, these endings are different, as you can see, from the imperfect endings. There are some similarities. The general observation can be that we see alpha-type endings here as opposed to what we might call omicron or epsilon-type endings over there. And we only have an alpha, we don't have a nu on the first person form. We have the sigma, all right, on the second person form. That's pretty indicative. We have an optional nu on the third person singular form, but just an epsilon. So the ending is the same on the third person singular for the first aorist as it is for the imperfect. We have an alpha instead of amen instead of omen, ate instead of ete, and an instead of on. So these last three can be just figured out by just putting an alpha there instead of the epsilon or omicron that you have it. Okay. Well, what complications exist here? Well, quite a few. Actually, we have for this the same complications we had for the imperfect and the ones we had for the future. Mixed, all both put together here. So we can put down complications. First of all, same as future. With adding sigma to certain consonants. So that chart that we learned for the future forms, adding sigma, applies to the aorist also. So when you add, for example, suppose your stem is grapho, the verb is grapho, the stem is graph. If you add the sigma to that, it becomes C, and you get graphs. So it's the exact same thing as you saw with the future. Then we have some, just like with the future, some first aorists are irregular. And have a base change. Instead of adding the sigma. And one example is Pharaoh. It's one of the ones I think it was on your list. Pharaoh becomes Anika. That's what you could call a base change. Actually, this one this has almost got a perfect type form. That kappa there is an indicator of perfect type form. So Some feel that what they've done, they should borrow the perfect form of another verb and stuck it in there for Pharaoh. But these must be memorized. So there's no way around just memorizing these. Okay, and then another complication would be same as imperfect. The same as imperfect with augment. With augment added to stem beginning with vowel. Okay. So the complications then are numerous here. First, the same problem with adding a sigma to the base. The fact that some of them are irregular, usually because for some reason, seeing Pharaoh, they don't add a sigma to something into a row. You don't get, you know, Pharaoh or something like that. It just doesn't work. They don't like that. So instead, they also change the base somehow. In this case, quite radically. Then you also have this complication with adding the augment. The same thing we saw with the imperfect over here. If your verb base begins with an alpha, for example, adding the augment turns it to eta, and the same complications that we see over here. Okay, any questions now about first aorist? Yes, Steve?
It's not about first aorist, but what would be the future tense of the Pharaoh?
Oh, I'd have to check.
I don't even, it may not even have a future. Yeah, it would have to be irregular. We can find out here real quickly. Don't use it that often. I've forgotten here. Used to have all these memorized.
Oiso.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's see. You know, yeah. Oiso. Okay. There's a real good one for you. Oiso is the future. Oiso in the future. Aorist is eninka, or possibly eninkon too. They've also got a second aorist for it. And perfect enenoka. This one's really strange. And enechthane for the aorist passive, we haven't got to those forms yet. But it's irregular all across the board. And it's so bad that it looks like it's just they've taken several different verbs and put them all together here. That's what some feel has happened in these cases where you get this big of a change. Oiso, I don't even remember that now. I remember ever hearing that. I'm sure I memorized it and want that. Okay. All right.
Mike, in an aorist, if our stem ends in a consonant, we'll add a sigma. Like if we have lu, but if lu ended in a consonant, we'll add a sigma.
Yes, you'll try to. Let's put it this way. You see, many of the consonants are, there's certain regular patterns for them. Those ones that we listed before. If a stem ends in a beta, suppose there was a beta there, then that adding the sigma would turn the whole thing into C. And if it was a phi, the same thing would happen. So certain consonants are okay, but they get a phonological change. And that's the same pattern that we saw with future. But other consonants, any other consonants besides those ones that are listed in that chart, if it ends in any other consonant besides that, you can expect it to be irregular and have a stem change of some sort. Okay? So if it ends in a vowel, no problem. Just add a sigma to it. If it ends in one of those consonants that we see on that chart, there's no problem. You know how to work that. If it ends in any other consonant besides those, like nu or rho or something like this, then you can expect to see irregularity of some sort, stem change.
So that's for the future naor circumcised around there. Because in the future, you just go ahead and do it normally, like you would the present.
Well, no. The future is exactly the same as the aorist in this respect. The futures are irregular also. In other words, if the thing's got a first aorist and it's irregular, you can also expect the future to be irregular. That's why Steve asked about this one down here, see, because this one's irregular, and the question is, what is it going to do in the future? Because, see, in the future, you have the same problem as you have in the aorist. You're going to try to add a sigma onto this stem that's got a row, and it just doesn't work. And so it's going to do something unusual. It'll have some kind of stem change or something. And so let's just summarize it that way. If whether it's future or first aorist, if the stem ends in a vowel, no problem, just add sigma. If the stem ends in one of those consonants that's on that chart, no problem, just do the appropriate transformation. If the stem ends in any other consonant besides those that are on that list, then expect it to be irregular, both in the future and in the aorist. Okay? If you look at that...
Maybe let's take a quick look here. I don't know if there shouldn't be any confusion because you're a long ways from memorizing these forms anyway. Let's take a look at page 330 in these principal parts just to show you what we mean here. And we'll look at the verb here, and then maybe why don't you cover up the second column there, and we'll do some guessing here just to maybe use it as an exercise to see what's going to happen. I'll pick out the forms. Cover up the second column. I'm going to ask you to predict what the future form is going to be. Okay? So take a look at... let's see. Well, that's a contract, but I won't give you that one. Look at the third one down. Iro. Okay, what would be the stem for that verb? The present stem for Iro. Just take the omega off. Yeah, it's ire. Okay, ire. So the stem ends in a ro, doesn't it? Okay, what's going to be the future form then? Yes, you can expect it to be irregular because a row, you're not going to add a sigma to a row. So look at it. You can uncover it and see what happens. It's a row. And notice we've got a stem change, the iota dropped out, and then we have an accent shift to the end with a circumflex on the last syllable. So that's one of the things that often happens is you get an accent shift. In some forms, the only difference at all is an accent shift. Okay, so, well, look at akuo there. What's going to be the future for that? Akuso. That's no problem because the stem ended in a vowel. So you just add a sigma and look, behold, there it is, akuso. Okay? Hamartano. Okay, what do you suspect about that?
Irregular.
For why? Stem ends in a nu there. That's not one of those consonants that's on that chart, you see. So you can expect something unusual. Well, it becomes hamarteso. And the nu dropped out and the vowel changed from a to a, eta. So there's a change. Anoigo, what would you expect to happen there? Stem ends in gamma. Right. Gamma is one of those ones on the list. And so a gamma plus sigma resulted in xi. So let's look and see what it is. Yes, anoixo. So that's perfectly regular. Okay. Bino. There's a stem ending in a nu. Can't add a sigma to that, so you can expect a change. And that one gets rather changed, becomes basomai. It's not only does it change from change the stem, but it also is what we call deponent. It's got passive type endings. We won't even get worried about those yet. Balo. Look at balo there. Two lambdas in the stem. You're not going to add a sigma to that. So, and I mean, the lambda is not on that list. In other words, the only way you really know is that lambda is not on the list. Okay, so what's going to happen? Well, in this case, it becomes balo, and you only get one lambda. In other words, you got a stem change. So, in other words, it's pretty predictable. You can predict. You can't predict what the irregularity will be, but you can predict which ones will be irregular. Okay, so and it's anybody's guess what they're going to do. There are some patterns, but they're not enough to be able to really assure you of anything. But you can go down through the list, and anything in this list that has a stem that ends in a vowel is going to be regular in the future. And if the stem ends in one of those consonants on the list, that will also be regular in the future. Another, at least you'll know what it's going to do. Once in a while, though, you run into something that looks like it ought to be regular, and it's still irregular. Look at Lego, for example, over on the next page, about a little over halfway down. They're in alphabetical order here. So Lego, look at the future of that. It becomes Uro. Now, where did that come from? See, Lego you would expect to be regular because the stem ends in a gamma, and or at least you predictable. You would expect Lexo for the future because the gamma plus sigma would be Xi. But it's not. That's not what it is. This one's just irregular on all counts. Actually, it looks like all the rest of the forms are derived from a different verb. That's what some feel that this has happened. Okay, and rhema and so forth comes from this other stem apparently. Okay, so that's just kind of a warning. You can't always be assured that because it looks like it ought to be regular, it will. Most of the time, it will. There's just a very few like this. All right, meno is another one there. You can see meno is going to be probably irregular because the stem ends in a nu. And sure enough, the future is meno. No stem change, really, but a change in accent. And no sigma, of course. Okay, any questions on the philosophy behind this? Yes, Tony?
On the two examples on 330 of Yidomai and Deomai,
mm-hmm.
What actually would be the stem?
Okay, for Yidomai, the stem would be gin. And you don't know, we haven't run into those verbs. Those are passive forms. This turns out to what would be what's called a deponent verb. It's got passive forms for the active meaning. And so it's not until we get into our passive form paradigms that we'll understand that. Once we get those passive form endings, then you'll be able to see a pattern there too. So these are omega conjugations, but they're what are called deponent verbs, meaning that they don't have any active forms, only passive forms. A lot of this has to do with the nature of the verb and the meaning of the verb. It's almost ginomai, to become. It almost has a middle type of meaning, just the verb. Because when you become something, if something becomes something, you could say in a sense that's kind of an action. There's a transformation taking place. But the thing itself is being benefited or you know, affected by the action. And the meaning of the verb is such that it's got a middle type of meaning. Well, that's going to be coming later on, chapter 16 to 18 or so. We'll start getting into those interesting things. And deomai, same thing. Okay. So you can kind of see what we're in for. Yes.
Now, back to that chart over there.
Mm-hmm.
When you're
on the augment, you mean?
Yes.
Yes.
With the augment and epsilon, upsilon,
mm-hmm.
And you say sometimes it remains the same without
mm-hmm.
changing to...
Mm-hmm.
When would you know that? Just by
just
knowing.
Yeah, yeah. It's just you have to learn the vocabulary of the word, and usually what will happen is that words in this category, you try to learn a couple of the principal parts anyway. The most common verbs will, in the second year, we'll get a chance to memorize some of these principal parts. So, of the common verbs, so we've got them down. And I think in this chart, I think there's a few examples where they'll give you both forms if it'll do one or the other. Sometimes you'll see it both ways in the New Testament. I'm trying to find one here. Was there one given earlier? Yes, I thought we saw one. Yes, heurisko. Okay, maybe that's one I was thinking of. Okay, yes, when they gave the example of this, they got heuriskon and heuriskon. So that one does it both ways. And to know which is which, you just have to learn it. You'll find out by looking at that aorist. The third principal part will tell you. And let's see here. Well, heurisko is the only one that's given there, and they didn't, in the chart back here, they didn't bother with the other form, so it's probably not as common. Yes?
I'd like to ask a question about this appendix that you're looking at here.
Mm-hmm.
When you were giving the example of anoiko,
right.
Anoiko in the future is just
racist. Yes.
But in some of these, you don't have, I mean, they're blank. Does that mean that, I presume that would have meant that they were regular, but does that mean there aren't any at all?
Right. That's what it means. If there's a blank space there, it means that those forms just do not exist. Well, apparently on some verbs it has to do with the meanings of the verbs and the way that the word is used. And other times what will happen is that a different verb will be used to get that meaning across. So I guess it's often enough to have to pay attention to, but some of them just have no forms at all for perfects, for aorist passives. Those are the two especially that you see, sometimes just big blank holes there. And some that are verbs that are deponent or something like this, they just they've used the middle and passive forms for the active meaning. Now you don't have anything left for the other ones, and it's just because the meaning of the verb is such that you never want to say it that way anyway. So and then other ones, it doesn't seem like there's any real reason for it. It just doesn't happen. Like strepso over here, it means to turn. There's no perfect active. There's no perfect forms for it. Well, there's no real intrinsic reason to think a verb like that couldn't have a perfect as opposed to some other. And so some of this may depend too upon the fact that in the New Testament, these forms are never used. But I think that really what he does there is he puts those in parentheses. You know, in other words, if the form potentially exists but it doesn't occur in the New Testament, he'll put that in parentheses. If it's blank, it probably means there's no forms, period.
You're saying there's no way you can say that?
Yeah, you just can't say that in Greek. At least not with that verb. In other words, the meaning you might be able to get across, but you probably use a different verb in a different construction. Okay, Jim? Oh, start a stem of a verb? No, this will cover the whole thing as far as what you're ever going to see augments on. Yeah.
So you won't see other diphthongs beginning a verb stem. That covers, yeah, I guess it will cover everything. You won't see it starting with omegas and things like that, so, yes.
Again, back to
the
Mm-hmm.
The aorist active and the perfect and the passive. The aorist passive, you have three forms for each.
Mm-hmm.
Just
regular. Oh, let me take a look at it again. Those are probably three variant forms. Anoigo is the verb you're looking at?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, yes. Those are three variant aorist forms. They're all first aorist, but they're a different form. You got anoixa, aneoixa, and aneoixa. And if it's in the perfect middle passive, same thing, and aorist passive, same thing. I don't know the answer to it, it's just that's the way you'll see it. In other words, you probably find those forms, all three forms in the New Testament. Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that on some of these words, there's not like Greek dictionaries sitting around?
Mm-hmm.
They can only use Greek literature that's available.
Mm-hmm.
That the word or the form of the verb was possibly known at the time of Christ's day, but
mm-hmm.
it was never used in any of the writings we have.
Mm-hmm.
That we wouldn't have record of that.
Well, that may be. Maybe, you know, not only just in the New Testament, but in papyri and other things, they just never found the form. And it may be, see, sometimes it may not be that you can't say it, it's just nobody ever did. And if nobody ever did, they never worried about it. You know, they never found the form in existence anyplace, so nobody worried about what it was. In other words, you know, theoretically, you could make the form, that's just a matter of rules. But nobody ever said it that way, and sometimes it has to do with idioms and the way people express things, and they just never came across using that particular verb form, and so we just have a big gap there as far as any documented usage of the term. That's basically what this is based on. Is there any documented usage of this form? And if there's not, then they just leave it blank. Okay. But that's not always the case. In some cases, the forms just wouldn't make any sense. And that'll have to do with the meaning of the verb itself. Yes?
Maybe somebody already asked this, but does that mean there'll never be a verb that starts with an eta or an omega?
Well, let me see here. I was thinking of omega. There's one verb, ophelo. I guess that starts with omicron. That's all right. Yes, this list is intended to be complete. So that would, you can deduce from that. Huh?
There is passive, though.
Oh, yes, but see, aorist passive already has the augment on it. See, that's already been an augmented form. We're talking about the present active form. So and the question is there a present active form that begins with a different diphthong or a different vowel than what that chart shows? And I'd have to say the answer is no. Otherwise, we'd have another place on the chart for it. Okay? But that doesn't mean you won't see a verb form that begins with an omega, for example, or omega with the order subscript, because if the verb form began with omicron to start with, an augmented form will be omega. So, in other words, if you see those long vowels in the beginning of a word, you it trips you off that you're looking at a past form of some sort. Yeah. And that you get a feel for that while you see an omega on something, said, you know, on a verb form, you know it's a verb form. You see an eta beginning a verb form, your mind is saying past tense even before you read the rest of the verb. Okay, good. Well, it helps to notice some of these features as much as we can. The more we can notice about these forms, the better it'll be. When you forget one piece of information, if you've got a lot of other pieces, you might be able to get the form back that way. Okay, yes.
Second point, what is the actual meaning of the indefinite form? You said aorist.
Oh, indefinite? Okay, the meaning of the indefinite is it's indefinite.
Revelation.
Let me try to explain it, though, because this is perhaps the biggest area of difficulty for beginning Greek students in what is the aorist? You know, it's that elusive aorist, you know. What is it? Some have used the term punctiliar, but that's not necessarily... It's okay if you understand the sense in which it's taken. Punctiliar means that the action takes place at a point in time. That's kind of the idea. Well, the aorist does not really tell you that the action takes place at a point in time. It only means that when you use an aorist form of the verb, that's the way you're conceiving of the action for the moment. All you're concerned about is that the action took place. You're not concerned about how long it took, what progress was involved, and so forth. When you use an aorist form, it'd be in English translated, I loosed, for example. We don't really know whether you loosed over a period of time and it was a progressive action that took place over a long period of time, whether you just instantaneously loosed it like that, or what. All you're concerned about is the fact that it's loosed and you did it. And so indefinite means that it's just not taking time to give you a lot of information about what the kind of action was. It just leaves the kind of action indefinite. It may have been a progressive action. It may not have been a progressive action. You don't know that from the aorist. In other words, because an aorist form is used in a certain passage, you can't really conclude that the action was not progressive. It might have, in fact, been progressive. In fact, in some cases, you might see an imperfect verb form used in one place to describe the same event that's described by an aorist elsewhere. But it's not that the action was any different. It's just that using the aorist is not putting any emphasis upon the kind of action at all. It's just saying the action took place and we don't know or care for the moment what kind of action it was. But when you use the imperfect, you're definitely laying stress upon the fact that the action is either of a recurrent nature or of a nature that is taking time and the person was in the process of doing it. Okay, so that's the best way I can describe it. It's easier to tell you what it's not than it is to tell you what it is because of the nature of it being indefinite. That's what the word aorist means. And see, the present can have an aorist idea as well. It can either be progressive or indefinite. And the future the same way. It's just the context has to decide there. Okay, yes?
Is it always past tense? I mean, like in John 20, was it 2022?
Mm-hmm.
Where they use the word received, you see the word receive it from what it is. But
okay.
Does it always indicate past tense?
I believe it does. There's some debate on that. See, in that particular passage, we're dealing with the aorist participle there. We haven't got to participles yet. That's a little bit different ballpark, a little bit different game there when you're dealing with participles, but not fundamentally different. There's some differences of opinion as to whether an aorist participle is always action antecedent or past relative to the action of the main verb. I believe that it is always action antecedent to the action of the main verb, but some of the Greek scholars will leave a loophole on that because they'll tell you basically that it almost always means action antecedent to the action of the main verb, except in a few cases. And the few cases are these cases where it gets them into trouble with their theology if they admit that. See, that's what I was kind of mentioning to you before. You've got to watch these guys when it comes to the theology. Many times the Greek is going to have to bend to fit theology. And that's one classic example, at least in my opinion. You can have your own opinion on it. But we've wrestled with this thing for a good number of years, a number of the scholars and so forth, and searched this thing from all angles. And that's the thing I can conclude about it. There's a few other examples they point out that seem a little bit to confirm their viewpoint. But if you look at each one of those, I can see the same picture. It's a consistent one. But that's the kind of thing we'll do in the second year. We'll look at examples like that and put some of these things to the test. And I'll try to point out to you places where scholarship has been influenced by their traditions. Not a whole lot of places, but there's just a few like that. Greek preposition, same thing, like John 1:1, Logos was with God, you see. There's a few places like that where tradition is putting so much pressure on that they're giving another alternate meaning for something that doesn't have any real justification at all. Yes?
Yeah. On page 79, there's a little chart that helped me to differentiate between imperfect and aorist.
Okay, page 79. Oh, yes. Yeah, as far as the range of meaning of translations. But you see there is an overlap here. The imperfect, I used to loose, I was loosing, I loosed, I did loose, could be translated any of those ways. I would lay your emphasis upon I used to loose and I was loosing. In other words, for an exercise or something like that, I would really try to translate it such a way it's really clear. You can translate it I loosed or I did loose, but you better have good clear context to indicate that it's a progressive action if you translate it that way. Then the aorist can be translated I loosed, I did loose, I have loosed, any of those ways, which leaves the nature of the action itself pretty much indefinite, even in English. Because to say I loosed isn't really saying I loosed over a period of time or I didn't loose over a period of time. It's just saying I loosed. And it may or may not have been a progressive action when it took place. Okay. So I kind of give you a ballpark to work with. And I suppose the bottom line is that it takes time and exposure to seeing both verb forms in function in the context to develop a more of a feeling for it. And we'll be calling it, when we start doing more translating and so forth a little bit later on, and we'll start translating before we get to second year, but as soon as we start looking at some of these things, we will, and we're going to start doing some exercises today. Well, I guess we won't have time today, but we'll start doing some exercises in which we will, on the board, do some translating. And I wanted to kind of translate things out loud and do the thinking processes for you so that you can begin to see how to do this. What's one area that some have expressed a need in is, if I give you a sentence in English, how are you going to put that in Greek? What processes do you need to go through to analyze it, break it down, decide what cases and so forth? We'll be doing some of that on the board here real soon. Okay, Tony?
So then, when the Holy Ghost is writing some of these passages that people play around with on the errors, mm-hmm. if he had wanted to say it a different way, he could have picked a different word that was mm-hmm. more specific. This errors is a broad word than the rest.
Take that example he just mentioned. Have you received the Holy Ghost since you believed? The way they're taking it is, did you receive the Holy Ghost when you believed? That's the way they're taking it. And my argument is, if you want to say that, you use a present participle. That's what you use to indicate simultaneous action. You've got another complete, very unambiguous mode in which to express that. The fact that an aorist participle was used ought to cause our attention to be drawn to that fact and to examine other cases in which aorist participles are used to see what kind of pattern exists. And that pattern is antecedent action. And that's what I'm saying, that's what it means in that passage too. So that's the kind of analysis you have to do sometimes to say. And that's what these scholars have done basically too, except that they've got some overriding considerations. There's certain theological biases involved that are forcing them to certain positions that they wouldn't be forced to otherwise. Perfectly objective person that didn't have a bias against speaking in tongues wouldn't have any problem with saying that that's an aorist participle and is indicating action antecedent the main verb. So only because that leads into a conclusion that they don't want to accept, that have to change things a little bit. Yes, Jim?
That one little chart on page 79, say like kind of test or something. Mm-hmm. You don't have a context.
Mm-hmm.
And like the word, like I lose,
mm-hmm.
I did lose. Is it best to stick to the imperfect?
Well, let me say it this way. On a test, when you don't have much context to go by, if you have an imperfect form in the Greek and you're trying to translate that in English, be sure to use either I was loosing or I used to loose. One of those two translations I would use, because that's the only way that you can transmit the idea of a progressive action if you don't have other context to do it. So without other context, be sure you give a translation that's that way. If it's an aorist form, just use the simple past and you'll be safe.
What if it's going from English to Greek?
Okay, if you're going from English English to Greek, then in the exercises and in any test that I give, I'm going to make sure that it's clear. I'll do the same thing. In other words, if I want you to use an imperfect verb form, I will say something like I used to loose or I was loosing. If I want you to use an aorist verb form, I will say I loosed or I did loose, something like that. Yes, Jim.
Maybe I'm a little confused with your example. Are we in Acts 19 or John 20?
Oh, you were talking about John 20. I think I was talking about Acts 19.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I think the one in John 20, let's see, he breathed on them and said, receive the Holy Ghost. That's an imperative. That's an aorist imperative. It's a similar type of situation, but it's a little bit different there.
So is the other way, that's a yeah. future
yeah.
aspect because of the imperative?
Well, yes, that's kind of what it gets boiled down to. That one's not quite as clear-cut as the other one. The one in Acts 19 is the one I'm referring to, and that's the aorist participle. That's a clear one. Okay, so I may have jumped to the one I was interested in the most. Okay, I apologize for that. All right, the other one's an imperative situation. We'll talk about imperative a little bit later on. See, this idea of aorist and the tense value is not quite as easily seen when you get to... with participles, it's kind of a relative tense value. It depends on the action of the main verb. And when you get to imperatives, you're dealing more with a kind of action, ingressive versus continuing, that type of thing. We'll have to wait,
do some more refinement on that later on. So then, but because of that aorist imperative situation, it would be a dangerous oversimplification to say that every aorist in every situation always must refer to past action.
Oh, yes, right. Yeah, not aorist imperatives. In other words, in the indicative mood, your aorist is going to refer to past action. In the participle mode, then you have another set of criteria. And that's why I said for an aorist participle, my statement was that it's action antecedent to the action of the main verb, not necessarily past, but antecedent to the action of the main verb. If your main verb is future, that aorist participle could still refer to future action, but it would be future action before this other future action. That's the whole point. So, and that's the critical issue in this particular passage. Okay? So as far as this tense idea as we know it, past, present, and future, is only applicable to your indicative mood. And once we get into the other moods, imperatives and subjunctives and so forth, we're going to have a lot of different considerations to make. Okay? And that's one of the things that's difficult about Greek too. There is quite a range of shades of meaning associated with these various forms, and it's not quite as simple as it is in English or in Hebrew. The Hebrew is real simple as far as tense ideas are concerned. Okay, then second aorist. I'm going to talk about second aorist. See, I'll leave the first aorist on the board here. We'll erase this part over here. It takes a little time to burn this stuff into our brain cells, I suppose, I'm going to say it that way, but it's worth spending some time talking about it, getting from different angles. For some students, you know, they've been in a fog, and then you say one thing and it starts to make it clear. So hopefully we'll say the right thing here for all of you eventually. Okay, point number two, second aorist. Okay. In the second aorist, what we have is the augment again, plus some base change. Now, we're not going to be using the present base anymore, because and then we use the imperfect endings. So now, actually, except for this base change, it's no different than it was for the imperfect. The imperfect had an augment plus imperfect endings also. But the significant difference is there's some change in the base. That's what takes place, that's characteristic of second aorist. And so, to use an example, now we can't use luo anymore because luo is the first aorist. So we have to use a different verb for our model in order to, and the verb that's most commonly used is lapo. So we'll take the verb lapo, and we'll see what happens to it. It happens to have a second aorist. So, first person singular, second person singular, third person singular, and plurals. What we see here with lapo is the stem change. We have the epsilon augment, as before, but now we have lambda iota p for the stem. There's been a stem change. And then we have the imperfect type ending. So it becomes elipon. Instead of elapon, it becomes elipon. So, and the imperfect would be elapon. But the a second aorist would be elipon, stem change. But we go back to the same endings. Now, the difference then, at least the first most obvious difference form-wise between the first and second aorist is that they've got a different ending system. The second aorist uses the same endings as the imperfect. But then, of course, there's a stem change. Okay, let's complete the paradigm here. You just use this different stem and then use the same endings that we saw before. For the imperfect. Okay, so we have the augment, we have a stem that has been changed, and we have the imperfect endings. So the key is a base change or stem change. So really, as far as building the forms, these second aorists are really easier than the first aorists. As far as building the forms, the tricky part is knowing what the stem change is.
you know the stem change, they're really not too difficult. Well, that's the hard part, because the stem change isn't predictable. I can't give you a set of rules that predict for you what the stem changes will be.
Okay, well, our bell is rung, so we'll have to finish this up. I want to put Jurisco on the board also to give you another type of example, and we'll say a few more things, talk about the complications, and that'll kind of summarize and wrap it up. So tomorrow we'll have that vocab quiz. We'll finish up some of this discussion, try to take any more questions that you have, get you prepared for that other quiz, and then we're going to do some in-class translating and some board work here to try to solidify these things. Yes, right. Yes,
absolutely.
Once you get whatever changes,
right. Once you get the same change, it'll be the same
book. Yeah, you'd really be in trouble if the stem changed differently in different forms. That would be.
I didn't get to sign the book.
Oh, okay. Is the roll book floating out there someplace? It missed.
Did it just miss you, Glenn, or did it miss the whole roll? Anybody else miss the roll book? Okay.
Okay, thank you, man.